हरि ॐ सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमाविर्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Because you can't dry wet glasses with wet gloves. Yes, it doesn't seem to work. We tried, but it didn't work.
Okay, page 41. Therefore, you should strive for liberation from the bondage of karma. You should not strive for the results of karma, such as swartha, since material happiness and distress are flickering like a dream. This identity is useless. Seeing and speaking without the effects of the gunas, such as happiness, as being permanent things is useless. Okay. We drank soma and became immortal and enjoyed with upsaras. This identity is similar to daydreaming about deriving bliss from sons or wealth, or dreaming about enjoying women or attaining swarga. This universe perceived by the senses is false. Okay, so he's making the point that simply the happiness and distress, you're seeing things in dreams, that you're having a good time, so, you know, whatever it is you want is happening. And so because of this dream, you're happy. So he's saying it's the same thing, it's just an effort for karma, effort for things within this world are the same element, that same kind of dream thing. Is that because it's temporary, it doesn't give any satisfaction. At the moment it may seem all right, but as you put time, then it's not, because the living entity will go from here to the next one to the next one. Right? So Jaimini has the idea is, no, if you make every moment, you know, proper, then you'll always be enjoying, so like that you can keep it going eternally. But we don't ever hear of anybody like that. Right? Because the problem is every action is covered by fault. And if there's a fault, that will come in as a bad reaction. So those add up, there's going to be trouble anyway. So even though you're getting something here, and you could keep yourself happy, then the problem comes is that how much happiness will that actually give to the soul? Because the soul, being Satchitananda, it's not actually going to be that satisfied. See, if we look at it really seriously, basically there's the hope that we'll be satisfied. But technically, have we ever been satisfied? Or if so, how many moments were they? Right? So if you look back, okay, in your whole life, how many moments are just like really great? These will have really something good. But the point is how many are there? Put them all together. How much time does it take up? And then compare that to the whole life. Right? And so then you compare that to every life. And so maybe after millions of lifetimes, you get together enough that maybe one lifetime you're happy. So that's the whole point, is it can't really be here. That's why then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is saying that therefore you should strive for liberation from the bondage of karma, not for the happiness derived from karma. Right? So if I do it with the fruit of intent, I won't be happy. But if I do it, and it's my duty to do this, and do it to please Krishna, that will liberate one from it. And because it's done in devotion, that will get you into the spiritual world. Does this make sense? Like that. So just by, we think something will happen, but actually it's a dream that'll be. Because if everything was happening just like we wanted it, and like, you know, the question came up is, you know, why can't we do that? But if every time you made an endeavor and it always came out good, you would get bored after a very short time. You know, we'll say, no, but we're saying that because from a position where it doesn't work. So therefore, we're thinking, we're speculating that, no, it would be great. But in actuality, it won't. Is that okay? So that's the problem. And even if everything we do works for us, does it work for everybody around us? You know? So that's another. So then are we going to be happy? Or even if we're happy, then others are not happy. Is that going to be good? So that's the problem on Brahmaloka. They have no material problems. They're going to live as long as Lord Brahma does. So they don't have any problems. You know, those, they're the real no worries might, you know, people. Right? Like that. But they look at everybody else in the universe and they're all suffering in that. And so that gives them pain. You know, especially at the disillusions, right? Because there's, I mean, 14 of them in a day of Brahma. You know? So it's like 14 times a day, you know, how you say, most of the universe gets wiped out and then recreated again. You know, so, you know what I'm saying? You look out, you have this nice, you're up on high, you have this nice view out the window over the city and all that. And 14 times a day, the whole city becomes inundated, burnt down and everything, and then built up. And burnt down, you know, so each time you go and look out, you know, 14 times a day, you go, oh, that's different. Oh, the big building's over here now, you know.
As long as you stay in the view, that's okay.
Yes, but how long can you stay in there?
After 14 times you're in.
Yeah, but I say that's every day for your whole lifetime. So it's just, you know what I'm saying? So it's good there, but then, you know, what's out there, it's going to bother you. Close the curtains, you know, get, you know, how you say, white double, get triple, you know, glass, you know, like that, moldy soundproof. Like that, it's still going to bother you. That's the thing. They're doing what they're doing, so they're not affected on that kind of platform. It just, you know, it makes them sad. So that's the whole point, is in the material world, technically there isn't any place that is great or perfect as is being, how you say, propounded. You know, we'll come up to that. Taladmars will make that point. You know, that's I think coming up very soon, right? Shruti Sukhat. We've heard about happiness, but who's ever had it? You know, if we could look in history, okay, who's the most powerful man, or who's the most intelligent man, or who is, you know, the most ingenious, or who, you know, did different. So we can say so many people, and can we say who is the happiest man? Everybody here has been in history class, no? Right, many years of it, right? And from different parts of the world, so we'd have quite a wide range of, how you say, historical, experiential backgrounds, okay? Can anyone say that in history there was someone that was ever discussed, he was the most happy man? People say, if this happens, I will be the most happiest in the world. Or, you know, it's like every guy says that. You know, he gets out his rose and all that. I'll be the happiest man in the world. Like that.
That's his moment.
Huh?
That's his moment.
Yeah, that's his moment. You know, like, what was it? So you're saying that, what was his name? How you say? Senior Dylan was being a little bit overly graceful when he, or gracious when he was saying that everybody gets their 15 minutes. So that's the whole, it's heard about, but in reality we've not seen it. But the soul doesn't give up. Why? Because the soul by nature is ananda, right? Satchit ananda. So by nature, their nature is happiness. Their nature is eternality. Their nature is activity, right? So because of that, despite all the difficulty, we still have hope.
Right?
Yeah.
So materially, sometimes they challenge devotees and they say that, okay, whatever you presented now, it makes sense. But then you change one phantasmagoria for another, for the spiritual phantasmagoria. And we don't see among devotees, we don't see people who are always happy. Something.
Because they're still here. And is the prison warden always happy? No, because he's still in the prison. He's not under the laws of the prison, controlled, but he's still in the prison. You'll see when he goes home, he's happier. So the whole point is that it's just the nature
of the place.
Of the place. So therefore, when one goes out of here and goes to the spiritual world, then it's there. But of the two, since we're here and trying everything here, it's never worked. So why not give the other phantasmagoria a shot? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? If you don't like it, come back here. Hey, you know.
Confirmed.
Right. Like that story with George Harrison?
Yeah, yeah.
And they asked about the money?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, well.
Yeah. Somehow he came to the conclusion that he should give the money, not that he shouldn't.
Yeah, yeah. Because he was probably thinking, why should give these money? This, that, I want to know other guys. And then that happened. And, you know, you always think, okay, well, you know, God, thunderbolts, and, you know, or lightning bolts, and that. So then, okay, yeah. Good. I'll buy it. Yeah, but it worked. You know what I'm saying? He got fixed. That one time when some guy got into his house and attacked him, tried to kill him, stabbed him, so he was just chanting the whole time.
Seven times in the chest.
Really? Seven times? Yeah. That's pretty amazing. But he was chanting the whole time. So it shows the process worked. Okay. Oh no, I have one. This we can still see. Srila Prabhupada comments in the same verse. Even if by fruitive activity or worship of the demigods one is elevated to the higher planetary systems for sense enjoyment, his situation is condemned in Bhagavad Gita as antavat, perishable. Right? So that's the whole point. That's why it bothers us. This place is perishable. Now, why does it, just we could continue on that as another angle, is why is it that we even consider every living entity wants to be happy, every living entity wants to be eternal, every living entity is looking for an understanding or some knowledge or something, right? So why is it it's every living entity? You know what I'm saying? Some people want to eat rice, some people want to eat chapatis, some people, you know, have something else they want to eat. God only knows what it, but the point is that's all, but everybody wants to be happy. So this is the common principle of the soul. So then there must be, if the soul is eternal, why wouldn't there be a origin of that soul that is eternal? And if we connect it to activities, relationships, interactions, all these kind of things, why wouldn't there be a place like that? You know, because otherwise, why would everybody relate to it? Unless it was common. Is that what you're saying?
Then in continuation of this kind of discussion, then we can also say it's just an idea or an ideal that it should be a place like that, because we just want it.
Yes.
But why we want it, we can't say.
No, but that's the thing is we can't say, but the acharyas can say. So what we're pointing out is people are coming from there to here to tell us about there. You know? So that's the thing. They come, they're from there, and they say it exists. And even when we say, well, how do we know it's true? We know for a fact that around here it's not nice. Like that. It means, like we said, you go through history, where is the nice? Where is the great? Where is the fabulous? So, therefore, then, you know, the only difference is we're saying we'll go there. We're not saying it will come here. That's the difference. You know, our point is, why try to make the prison into perfection. Why not go to a nice place? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say the prison, we put, you know, granite on the walls, you know, got, you know, all nice and this and that, but you're still in prison. So. You know, it's like Prabhupada told that professor in Moscow. Yeah. He told him, he's saying, okay, well, how do we know what you're saying or what we're saying? You know, because on the academic platform, you have two different theories. They could either be right. And so then Prabhupada said, yes, at the time of death, we'll find out. Like that. You know, was I correct or were you correct? You can always throw that in if need be. So it says, yeah. So, but, you know, at the time of death, then you remember your conversation and my conversation, you know, what we said. And then you see what happens.
Actually, he remembered after so many years, not at the time of death.
Oh, okay.
Then he wrote an article.
Oh, really?
In Russian, yeah. That he remembered Swami Prabhupada in this conversation.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And made very serious impression on his life.
Okay.
Although at that time, he couldn't realize.
Yeah, he couldn't. But later, okay.
Yeah, 30 years later,
okay,
he became
okay.
Really old.
Okay. So Samskar was good?
Yeah.
That's good. So he'll get benefit.
Yeah.
You know. Okay. The happiness one enjoys in this way is like the pleasure of embracing a young woman in a dream. For some time it may be pleasing, but actually the basic principle is false. Because the mental concoctions of happiness and distress in this mature world are compared to dreams because of their falsehood. So that's the whole thing, is that one can say, no, but it's real. But the thing is why the point of the dream is used is because we'll be thinking, if this situation happens, I'll be happy. But there's someone else thinking, if this situation happens, I won't be happy. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. Whatever situation, this will make me happy. The same situation, someone else will say, that doesn't make you happy. So does that situation make you happy or not? So that's the point. It just depends upon your perspective. Your samskars will say, this will make me happy. Right? You know, like say for, depending on what it is, you know, a rat, you know, a nice hole in the ground, you know, filled full of all kinds of grains that they stole from your kitchen. You know, they're saying, I'm happy. You know, and you're looking at the hole in the pot in your kitchen, and you're not happy. Right? They were really happy. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing. And then you're thinking, if I catch the rat, I'll be happy. And if you do catch the rat is unhappy. So that's the whole thing. It's what's it? Jivo, jivasya, jivanam. You know that one?
Yeah.
So that's, you know, one living entity thrives off of the, how you say, gets benefit off of another living entity, right? So the one gains that the other's lost. You know, it's like the market. You make money because someone else lost money. That's how it works, right? Is that okay? So the Vedas say, because that's the way it is here, therefore, you have a particular lifestyle in which it's the best way you can gain without causing a disturbance in someone else. Does that make sense? Let us say you're selling something, someone buys that from you. Okay? Now, you sell them something good and solid, like that you have taken their money. Right? You have made profit. But at least they have something that will work for them, it'll be good. Now, if you didn't give them something good, you could make more profit. But then they're disturbed. Right? So, the Vedas then will recommend is you make an honest livelihood. So, you do your best to perform your duty, and then you'll get profit off others performing theirs. Does that make sense? So it works like that. That way, then, there's the least disturbance. So that's called piety, what's recommended. If we look at it, no, I could get more profit by doing something else, you can do that. The only problem is then you will suffer in the future. Does that make sense? So whenever a living entity is suffering, it's not good. Right? So that's why we try to correct the situation. But because suffering is theirs, because they've done something that is not proper. Right? Does that make sense? All thoughts of attaining happiness by using the material senses have a false background and therefore have no meaning. So if I think the sense is going to touch the sense object, that's going to make me happy. The problem is, as soon as the sense and the sense object are disconnected, there's no experience. You can in your mind think about it, but then it's a mental happiness. It's again mental concoction. Because the sense and the sense object aren't touching anymore. In a sense, it's the shortest. That's the whole point. We put the most emphasis on sense gratification, but it's the shortest of all possibilities for happiness. Right? If you base it on good qualities, in the performance of activities and relationships and duties, that will give you a longer term happiness. Because qualities last. Sense touching, sense object, unless it's touching, there's no effect. Right? But the quality, since it is a subtle thing, that can be appreciated for this lifetime. Then you change bodies, you don't remember the last, so you lose the benefit. Right? But then on the spiritual platform, if we connect the senses and the sense object to Krishna's service, then the touch with the sense and the sense object will still have that same temporary effect. But the satisfaction of using it in Krishna's service and the eternal benefit gained from service, that will remain. Does that make sense? So therefore, ultimately, the material world still is not going to give any satisfaction. But engaging it in the Lord's service, that will give satisfaction. Does that make sense? Yeah. Sri Yamaraj continued, those who have full knowledge of self-realization, who know very well that the spirit soul is eternal, whereas the body is perishable, are not overwhelmed by lamentation. But persons who lack knowledge of self-realization certainly lament. Therefore, it is difficult to educate a person in illusion. Because they're in illusion, so it's very difficult. So even if you say something, it'll be interpreted within illusion. So it's going to be a problem. So therefore, that's why he's telling a story within a story. Because if he tells them, it's a problem. But if you tell the story about someone else, the thing happening, then you tend, because if you're looking at someone else, it's obvious exactly what should be done. If you're in exactly the same situation, it's really hard to tell what to do. Very, very, it's like, you're there, your friend is there, he's having this trouble. You can very clearly say, yeah, you do this and that, and so many things. No, but this problem, no, but you do like this, don't worry about it. Oh, but this and that, no, I'm bad, this and that. But if it happens to you, it's very difficult. But, so here is that story being theirs, then you're looking at the third party, then they will look and say, yes, this is how, Yamaraj is right. Then the queens, then they have, they have to adjust the consciousness. So then naturally, what does that mean? It comes back to them. Okay. So it's as we saw here. One, it's very good, in relating it. But just Hiranyakashipu is good. he's as far as on the material platform, he's the best. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Mimamsakas say that the world is permanent. Shankya says the world is temporary, but real. Then we cannot understand the world at all. It is not possible to do anything. That is the nature of those who lament. Right? Because they'll see, one says this, the other one says that, so we can't understand it at all, therefore they lament. Right? But if we look at the one, the Mimamsakas says the world is permanent, then if something went wrong, just take the bull by the horns, go out there and work and get. But because we've never seen the history of it working, so even though they're trying this now for thousands of years, it's still not working. Right? Like that. Shankya says world is temporary but real. So therefore it is there, but what we think we can gain from it, that's the impermanent. So that's much more feasible. So with that in mind, then we perform our duties. If we get good, nice. If it doesn't come out good, don't worry about it.
You know? It's very difficult because of the same nature of attachment.
Yes, that's what it says. Because of the illusion, that's where they... But the thing is for us, see, here he's having to deal on the material platform. He doesn't have anything else. So it's only because of their piety that therefore they can understand. If one's mixed too much with ignorance and that, well, they're demons, so there's more passion there. And they're very pious, otherwise how are they in such a powerful position? You know, his mother's a great one of the main demigods, and you know, stuff like this. So for us, then, if we can just continue devotional service, then we'll start to get an understanding with time. Right? There's a knowledge of detachment will come. So we can just commit ourselves to devotional service is what's to be done. And the material world does have its issues. You know, and it's a problem, but if we can keep doing devotional service, then things will work out. But if we give up devotional service, then there's no hope. So that's the thing. It's just like there's the primary creation, there's the secondary. So the primary is the concept of it that is always there, while the secondary is what is coming and going. Right? So the universe is always created on the same thing. So the primary creation is always the same. Right? Secondary will have slight variations, you know, just to give different flavors. You know, just like on the planet here. You have so many different kinds of climates and even the same kind of climate. If you take, let's say, the tropics and just go around the planet, you'll see the effect of the tropics is slightly different, depending on where you go. Is that... This struck me, probably the least land mass is within the tropics.
Least?
Yeah. It's not a major amount.
Not as much.
Yeah, that's north or south. Yeah. South also not as much. North is a lot.
North is much.
Yeah. But, you know, so you'll get all these different kinds of flavors. And it's just like, okay, you go up north, you have, what is it, Norway. But those fjords, you won't see anywhere else in that kind of number and that kind of, you know, so you go to different places, there's something there, but it's very unique. Even though there's other places in the same kind of climates and things like that. You know, I think if you go out into the, you know, various parts of the Middle East, you're not going to see very nice white rocks. You know, you're just not going to see it. Sand, yes. White rocks, no. You know. Does that make sense? Yeah. Though lamentation may be one's nature, it creates problems. In order to illustrate this, Sri Yamaraj tells a story. Now, there's a story within the story, right? Because now he's told to them that. So the whole point is unless the queens become convinced, why would the family become convinced? So he has the same principles being used as you tell something of someone else so that you become convinced. Right? So you only have to go as far as until the original party is convinced. You know, it's otherwise you keep telling them. And then, little Miss Riding Hood, whatever, she bumped into Santa Claus. And he had a problem, because Rumpelstiltskin, you know, had gone off with his tears. Like that. And he said, why did he take my tears? We were looking for Nemo. You know, so, yeah, so... Yeah, so there's a limit to how far you have to go with the story, right? Okay. So now he tells the story, right? There was once a hunter who lured birds with food and captured them after spreading a net. He lived as if appointed by death personified as the killer of the birds. While wandering in the forest, the hunter saw a pair of Kulinga birds. Of the two, the female was captivated by the hunter's lure. O queens of Suyagya, the male Kulinga bird, seeing his wife put into the greatest danger in the grip of providence, became very unhappy. Because of affection, the poor bird, being unable to release her, began to lament for his wife. Alas, how merciless is providence. My wife, unable to be helped by anyone, is in such an awkward position and lamenting for me. What will providence gain by taking away this poor bird? What will be the profit? If unknown providence takes away my body, my wife, who is half my body, why should he not also take me? What is the use of my living with half of my body, bereaved by loss of my wife? What shall I gain in this way? The unfortunate baby birds, bereft of their mother, are waiting in the nest for her to feed them. They are still very small and have not yet grown their wings. How shall I be able to maintain them?
Srila Prabhupada comments.
The bird is lamenting for the mother of his children because the mother naturally maintains and cares for the children. So, these things being made, it's not just necessarily a story. This is things that actually happen. We just think, oh, there are birds there. But actually, birds think like this. The animals think like this. So when it comes to eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, they're very developed. Like that. You know, you may say, oh, but they're in ignorance. But how many humans are in ignorance? Right? It says out of 400,000, says most of them aren't even up to the platform of following Vedic culture. So that means most of them are in ignorance. Right? So the problem comes is that as far as these thinking, they think like this. You know, they may not, how you say, you don't see them sitting down in the back writing literatures and all stuff like that, but they actually think like that. That's why you're not supposed to bother the animals. Because just as you bother them, it affects them just like this. We're thinking, oh, they're an animal, it doesn't matter. But actually it affects them the same way. You know? So only through the scriptures do you actually understand even how the animals are thinking. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like we hear the donkey braying and we think, what a nuisance. But in the donkey's mind, he thinks he's saying nice poetry. Right? Like that. So that's the thing. He's a bit of a poet. He's a bit of a, you know, romantic. So that's why I can't understand why people are throwing sticks and yelling and abusing him, because, you know, he just sat down and said some nice poetry. So that's the difficulty, you know. But we're no one other than another donkey is appreciating the donkey's poetry. So that's the problem. You know. Yamaraj, however, in the guise of a small boy, has already explained that although his mother left him uncared for and wandered in the forest, the tigers and other ferocious animals had not eaten him. So that's the point. If you're supposed to live, you will. If you're not, you won't. You know, it means there's a standard. Okay, if this happens, that's why people then care. But the point is this: if you're not supposed to, it's not. I saw this one. It was an article. It was talking about the subtle facial expressions, and it was telling something about how in the animals they have the same thing. And then it was relating a story of how at the end of winter, you know, whenever it was, and the polar bears, they come out of hibernation. And so when bears come out of hibernation, because they've been sleeping for 6 months or whatever, they're hungry. Right? So this person, they had a dog, a husky or like that, and it was chained out, and, you know, outside the house like that. And the bear comes out and sees the husky. Now, the husky's not going to do a whole lot, right? One, they're small and it's chained. So then here comes the bear. So they think, okay, this is it. You know, this is, you know, the bear must be thinking, this is providence, right? You just wake up and, you know, immediately you have yourself a snack, right? But the polar bear goes over and starts playing with the dog. Playing, rolling around. They're having a fabulous time. It's not that the dog's scared. They're just playing and, you know, like they would. And then after that, it walks off. So it was probably just so happy to see another living entity after so long that it was just playing. You know? But that's not, you know, it's just so, that's the whole point. That's what Yamaraj is talking about, is providence. He's alone. He has no parents. He's wandering the forest. It's full of dangerous animals, and he's still fine. So that's the thing. If someone's supposed to, they will. If they're not, they won't. We're thinking, I'm the one doing it. No, we're an instrument. Right? As he gives the example. Otherwise, you have somebody, all the family members are there, everything, the best and everything, and still people have problems. Right? Does that make sense? So that's what he's pointing out, is that the illusion is we think I'm taking care. No, it's that this person will be taken care of to a certain degree. I can be an instrument to be involved in that, but it's not that I'm taking care. The person's already being taken care of by the Supreme. I can be the one used as an instrument, or I can not do it and someone else will take care. Is that what somebody said? But the person will be taken care of. So if you say no, but that happened and then they had so much difficulty, they were supposed to have difficulty. Okay. It's not nice, and we can do something about it. Of course, we tried to do something. You understand? Okay, that's fine. But then, what's the next step? To do either, if you can correct that, do something, or if not, see that you don't do it again. You know what I'm saying? In other words, now you know that in this situation you should do something. Yeah? Okay. Because the past you can't correct. You can only deal in the present. So if you have an opportunity in the present to correct some problem in the past, then you do. But if not, by lamenting about it, it won't make it any better. Is that what I'm saying?
This is why I'm thinking that this psychology is not working. So it's all about
the past. Yeah.
And it's just
you let it out and all that. Yes, that's nice. But let us say the child is having a problem. Something came up. They didn't, they weren't comfortable with and all that. So isn't it a standard thing that, the parent or the guardian is there and encourages them if they want to cry, and then they do and it's, or talk about it. So it's just a standard thing. So all it is in a society where people don't have people who love them, therefore then these psychologists can step in and do things that should have been done when they were a kid, and so people think it's nice. Like that. But the point is anybody could go and lend an ear and try to be nice and all that. And it would probably be a lot less expensive. Yeah. Nice stuff. So sometimes, let's say you have, that would be a standard kind of situation. If somebody's actually, has clinical issues, then their training then has that medical aspect. They can bring them to the neutral point. But from neutral, what can they do? How much can they do? That they're talking, they're nice, they're being pleasant, they're trying to be... It's just like this. If, let's say you have somebody who's, a good friend, and you're trying, you listen to what they have to say. Right? So, here's somebody you pay, they'll listen to you. And they know how to speak in such a way that you feel comfortable to talk. So that's good. But that should be kind of standard stuff that everybody knows. Just proper dealing. So. Before that was the proper thing. You don't hear if they Draupadi's very upset, Bhima goes. Now you think of Bhima, right? He's rough and ready, he's he can hold his own, like that. But when Draupadi's upset, he goes, he sits, he consoles, he knows how to say everything, And in the modern, you have a guy like that that's big and so strong and all that, generally he would be the least understanding of that, you would think. Right? But here, he knows how to speak like that. Arjuna knows how to deal like that. Yudhishthira knows how to deal like that. It's just Hiranyakashipu, biggest demon in the universe. He knows how to do like that. So all it is nowadays, it's been this culture has, been lost in so many circles, so then some people make a profession out of, doing this. And it's needed because it's natural. It's what people want. But the point is it's thought that, oh, it's the psychology of the forest. Any mature person would be able to do it. It was part of the training. You know what I'm saying? It's just it was part of the culture. So because from growing up in environments that technically aren't human, we're not used to what human life actually is and how much is there and how much it can be gained by accepting it, then how much is lost by not accepting it. Okay. Fortunately, the spiritual world is based on, you know, human life, so no problem. Okay. Everybody's human life. You know, unless you go to Vaikuntha, then they'll all be demigods there. But if you go to Braj, they're all humans. The real fact is that if the Supreme Personality of Godhead protects one, even though one be motherless and fatherless, one can be maintained by the goodwill of the Lord. Otherwise, if the Supreme Lord does not give one protection, one must suffer in spite of the presence of his father and mother. Another example is that sometimes a patient dies in spite of a good physician and good medicine. Thus, without the protection of the Lord, one cannot live, or without parents. But, so for any disease and all that, they have their statistics. And so there's always going to be some are smaller, some are bigger, that people don't survive, even with the best facility, best care. Right? They just don't. So that means is that the Lord's taking care or not. Right? And that's reciprocating according to the karma. Does that make sense? So, you know, that's the...
Sometimes, can we say that sometimes the Lord... Because technically, whatever happens, the Lord is taking care, even if somebody gets a delusion time.
Right.
But at the same time, can we say, like, in Bhagavad Gita it said that demons are doing austerities which are not written in the Vedic scripture, that's why they're torturing themselves and torturing the Paramatma within, and that's why at some point Paramatma says, okay, that's it, tell the Yamaraj to do something. Can we say that in this situation, in this situation the Lord is taking care by giving you another life?
See, this is another reason for stating the point first, so you don't forget it.
Yes, yes.
Then you give all your reasons and
my
examples.
My point was that the Lord is taking care by giving you another body, because this body, you wasted.
Yes, like that. Yes. It'll be, you're given another body in which you will more appreciate to not waste the one you have.
Mm. Not for us.
Yeah, so then whatever you need to go through for that, then you're given. You know, so depending on what it is.
These ant thoughts.
Oh, there's an ant. Oh, okay. I thought you were making some kind of offering. What's going on here?
Paramatma.
Yeah, yeah. So. Yeah, okay. Okay, cool. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Thus, without the protection of the Lord, one cannot live, with or without parents. So it's the protection of the Lord's there. If there's parents or no parents, you'll live. The protection of the Lord's not there, with or without parents, you won't. Is that what you're saying? Yeah. Another point in this verse is that fathers and mothers have protective feelings for their children even in bird and beast societies, not to speak of human societies. Kali Yuga, however, is so degraded that a father and mother even kill their children in the womb, on the plea of their scientific knowledge that within the womb the child has no life. Prestigious medical practitioners give this option, and therefore the father and mother of this day kill their children within the womb. How degraded human society has become. Their scientific knowledge is so advanced that they think that within the egg and the embryo there is no life. It's degraded so even you don't see that the standard behavior of relationships between the living entities in the Kali Yuga, that even becomes reduced. Because he's pointing out that the animals, what's said here, the animals do have these kind of affections. So that's the point. You know, it's just like, let us say you have an animal. You know, it's a ferocious animal. And you happen to be walking by. And it's not, let's say, not hungry. It may not bother you.
Lion is like that.
Sorry?
Lion's
like that, yeah. Yes, I think even crocodiles. Yeah. No, alligators.
No, crocodiles will catch,
they'll catch you anyway and stick you down there for later, for wrong. Yeah. Alligators won't bother you. Yeah. So if you're in Florida, you're okay. If you're in Egypt, watch out. Yeah. And so, but let's say you have an animal that's not necessarily a ferocious animal, but they have their, you know, children, and you walk by. Even that animal, it's not a ferocious, it may attack you. So that's the whole thing, is they have this sentiment. Right? Because they're not a ferocious animal, so it's dangerous for them, but they're willing to do to protect. Does this make sense? So Prabhupada's pointing out is, even in animal society, this is there. So basically what he's saying, the modern scientific society is less than animals. Because they, means the animals, will never kill their children like this. But you know, with this kind of reasoning. Right? But the what do you call it? Modern will, because they say there's no life, or there's all this and that. Is that the same thing? You do have animals who do kill the babies, but that's because they are alive. They don't eat things that are dead. Does that make sense? So at least they accept that they're alive. But the modern society, they're so foolish to say they're not alive. Otherwise, why are they growing? Now these so-called scientists are receiving Nobel Prizes for advancing the theory of chemical evolution. But if chemical combinations are the source of life, why don't the scientists manufacture something like an egg through chemistry and put it in an incubator so that a chicken will come out? What is their answer? With their scientific knowledge, they are unable to create even an egg. Such scientists, you know, this is why I use this example, are chickens thought of as intelligent?
No.
No. Generally, you know, in most cultures, you know, if your bird brain means you're not smart. Right, and so here, you know, the scientist can't produce the egg, but the chicken can. You know, so who's the dumb one here? Right. Right. That's a, yeah. Such scientists are described in Bhagavad Gita as Mayaya Pratigyana. Bhagavad Gita 7:15, fools whose real knowledge has been taken away. Right. So they're fools because that's the practical position they're in. I'm not saying that they're not as intelligent, but the intelligence becomes taken away, so they're foolish in their understanding. They're not men of knowledge, but they pose as scientists and philosophers, although their so-called theoretical knowledge cannot produce practical results. Right? They talk about it, they can't do anything with it. Right? So that's the problem. Sri Yamaraj continued. Because of the loss of his wife, the Kalinga bird lamented with tears in his eyes. Meanwhile, following the dictations of mature time, the hunter, who was very carefully hidden in the distance, released his arrow, which pierced the body of the Kalinga bird and killed him. Thus, Yamaraj, in the guise of a small boy, told all the queens, "You are all so foolish that you lament, but do not see your own death. Afflicted by a poor fund of knowledge, you do not know that even if you lament for your dead husband for hundreds of years, you will never get him back alive. And in the meantime, your lives will be finished." Right? So in lamentation, nothing gets done, nothing gets benefited, and that way your just life goes away. So all the lamentation that's there, all you do is lose valuable time. So Srila Prabhupada comments, Yamaraj once asked Maharaj Yudhishthira, "What is the most wonderful thing within this world?" Bhāj Yudhiṣṭhira replied, Mahabharata Vanaparva 13.1.16. Wow. Vanaparva 313, that's the chapter. Big book. Okay. Ahanyahani bhutani gachantiha yamalayam seshas stavaram ichanti kim ascharyam atafparam. Hundreds and thousands of living entities meet death at every moment. But a foolish living being nonetheless thinks himself deathless and does not prepare for death. This is the most wonderful thing in the world, in this world. Everyone has to die because everyone is fully under the control of material nature. Yet everyone thinks that he is independent. Whatever he likes, he can do. That he will never meet death but live forever. And so on. So-called scientists are making various plans by which living entities in the future can live forever. But while they are thus pursuing such scientific knowledge, Yamaraj, in due course of time, will take them away from the business of so-called research. Okay, so all these persons working on eternal life are all dying. And they haven't gotten any closer. You know, they've solved some diseases and this and that. But, you know. So, yes. Hiranyakashipu said, while Yamaraj, in the form of a small boy, was instructing all the relatives surrounding the dead body of Suyagya, everyone was struck with wonder by his philosophical words. They could understand that everything material is temporary, not continuing to exist. After instructing all foolish relatives of Suyagya, Yamaraj, in the form of a boy, disappeared from their vision. Then the relatives of King Suyagya performed the ritualistic funeral ceremonies. Therefore, none of you should be aggrieved for the loss of the body, whether your own or those of others. Only in ignorance does one make bodily distinctions, thinking, who am I? Who are the others? What is mine? What is for others? Right? So he's pointing out, I and mine. Srila Prabhupada comments, in this material world, the conception of self-preservation is the first law of nature. According to this conception, one should be interested in his personal safety and should then consider society, friendship, love, nationality, community, and so on. You know, it's like on the airplane. First you put on your own, you know, how you say, what are those called?
Oxygen mask.
Oxygen mask, then you put on others. So, you know, same principle.
True.
Hmm?
It's an eternal principle.
Yeah, it's eternal principles. Okay, so all these they're all developed because of the bodily conception of life and a lack of knowledge of the spirit soul. This is called ajnana. As long as human society is in darkness and ignorance, men will continue to make huge arrangements in the bodily conception of life. This is described by Prahlad Maharaj as bharam. In the materialistic conception, modern civilization makes enormous arrangements for huge roads, houses, mills, and factories. And this is man's conception of the advancement of civilization. People who do not know, however, that at any time they themselves may be kicked out of the scene and forced to accept bodies that have nothing to do with these enormous houses, palaces, roads, and automobiles. Therefore, Arjuna was thinking in terms of his bodily relations with his kinsmen. Krishna immediately chastised him, saying, Kutastva kashmalam idam vishame shamupastitam anarya jushtam. This bodily conception of life is befitting the anaryas, the non-Aryans, who are not advanced in knowledge. An Aryan civilization is a civilization advanced in spiritual knowledge. Not merely by stamping oneself an Aryan does one become an Aryan. So that adjusts that point there. Any misgivings may come with this discussion, then that's been corrected now. Right? To keep oneself in the deepest darkness concerning spiritual knowledge and at the same time claim to be an Aryan is a non-Aryan position. Right? So only a non-Aryan would not be endeavoring for spiritual understanding and claim to be an Aryan. So Aryan means it's about the spiritual, it's not about the bodily conception of life. Right? So they would, their endeavor would be how to get beyond I and mine, right? Not how to fully establish I and mine. Right? Sri Narad Muni continued, Diti, the mother of Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, heard the instructions of Hiranyakashipu along with her daughter-in-law, Rushabhanu, Hiranyaksha's wife. She then forgot her grief over her son's death and thus engaged her mind and attention in understanding the real philosophy of life. Srila Prabhupada comments, when a relative dies, one certainly becomes very much interested in philosophy. But when the funeral ceremony is over, one again becomes attentive to materialism. Even daityas, who are materialistic persons, sometimes think of philosophy when some relative meets death. The technical term for this attitude of the materialistic person is smarshana vairagya, or detachment in a cemetery or place of cremation. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, four classes of men receive an understanding of spiritual life and God: Artha, the distressed; Jigyasu, the inquisitive; Arthati, one who desires material gains; and Jnani, one who is searching for knowledge. Right? So that's the why is the difference there? One is inquisitive. It's interesting. It sounds, you know, so as long as their interest is piqued, they continue in that. But as soon as they come across something they don't like or something else catches their attention, then they're gone. While the jnani is looking for, how you say, searching for actual, for knowledge. So he wants to know who the Lord is, wants to know these things. But still it's considered a neophyte position because it's not so much about the Lord as much about his need to know. Right? Does that make sense? So one is an interest to know, one is a need to know. So when it comes to need to know, that you can continue on very nicely. So, yes?
Can we say that one is looking for answers and one is looking just for new, something new?
Yeah, something new, different. It's intriguing. It's, you know, it's whatever. It makes your intelligence, you know, like sometimes we would have questions. They're just, you know, for interest's sake.
Yeah,
it's just, you know, that'd be fun. So that's the aspect of jigyasu. Mm-hmm. Because what are you going to do with it? How does it enhance your actual knowledge of Krishna, you, the relationship? It's just interesting, you know. So, you know, not that it's not there, but when we're discussing, you know, more serious, then we should be in that mood. That can be you're sitting around with friends, then, you know, whatever you want to discuss, that's another thing. Right? Especially in one who is very much distressed by material conditions, one becomes interested in God. Right? So that's also a reason that Maya's arranged it, that the place is temporary and full of miseries. Because then the tendency will be to turn to God. And at some point, one will, in proper association, turn to God, and one will stick at that point. Rather than just turn, and when things aren't so bad, then go back. Does that make sense? So that's another... Because otherwise, why is it like that? Why? Because then one turns. Point is you understand you're not supposed to be here. Is that something? Yeah. Therefore, Kunti Devi said in her prayers to Krishna that she preferred distress to a happy mood of life. In the material world, one who is happy forgets Krishna or God. But sometimes, if one is actually pious but in distress, he remembers Krishna. Right? So if you're pious and in distress, that's why it's recommended if you follow the lifestyle and the mode of goodness, that'll be pious. So then when there's distress, you'll tend to turn towards the Lord. But if one's impious, then one will tend to not turn towards the Lord. One will just think of a new plan. Right? Is that... Queen Kunti Devi, therefore, preferred distress because it is an opportunity for remembering Krishna. When Krishna was leaving Kunti Devi for his own country, Kunti Devi regretfully said that she was better off in distress because Krishna was always present. Whereas now that the Pandavas were situated in their kingdom, Krishna was going away. For a devotee, distress is an opportunity to remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead continuously. So it's not saying or recommending, it'll come anyway, you don't have to look for it. But when it's there, one can remember Krishna. But with time, as one develops, one will remember whether it's nice or not nice. And then one will be stable, steady, nicely situated.
So this will be the position of Madhyamadhikara.
Yes, like that. It means that it'll be, you know, as you said, you know, fairly stable. It's not that there won't be some unstable, but the more they advance, the less and less that is. Like that. Okay. We didn't get a blank page this time. Sorry? You had an extra page.
Six.
You had two, but is it has the same number?
No, it's just 60 and then 46.
60 and then 46. And then after that?
Extra page.
So you have 2 46s.
No, I have 60, I guess. I have two. Just in the middle.
Huh. Oh, well.
Yeah, I have 260.
Oh, it's 260s. Okay. Chapter 3, Hiranyakashipu's plan to become immortal. Right? His brother died, so therefore he's going to become immortal, right? Pratigya. One who performs severe austerities for sense gratification is fearful to the entire world, whereas a devotee who performs even a slight amount of devotional service is a friend to everyone. But even though you're doing some big, big work, but because it's for sense gratification, it's just going to disturb others. But if you're doing devotional service, even a small amount, it's actually beneficial to everyone. But Chapter 3 summarizes questions and answers. The rhetorical question uttered by Hiranyakashipu in verse 11 and the one poised by Brahma in verse 19 do not come under the study. Adhyaya Prakashika. This chapter describes how Hiranyakashipu performed a severe type of austerity for material benefit, thus causing great distress throughout the universe. Even Lord Brahma, the chief personality within this universe, became somewhat disturbed and personally went to see why Hiranyakashipu was engaged in such a severe austerity. Hiranyakashipu wanted to become immortal. He wanted not to be conquered by anyone, not to be attacked by old age and disease, and not to be harassed by any opponents. Thus, he wanted to become the absolute ruler of the entire universe. With this desire, he entered the valley of Mandara Mountain and began practicing a severe type of austerity and meditation. Seeing Hiranyakashipu engaged in this austerity, the demigods returned to their respective homes. But while Hiranyakashipu was thus engaged, a kind of fire began blazing from his head, disturbing the entire universe and its inhabitants, right? Because somebody who disturbs... So this is the original, how you say, meaning of someone who by their actions, they're too absorbed in their own activities that they, what they do makes it uncomfortable for others. That is right. So. Yes. Okay, disturbing the entire universe and its inhabitants, including the birds, beasts, and demigods. When all the higher and lower planets became too hot to live on, the demigods, being disturbed, left their abodes in the higher planets and went to see Lord Brahma, praying to him that he curtail this unnecessary heat. The demigods disclosed to Lord Brahma Hiranyakashipu's ambition to become immortal, overcoming his short duration of life, and to be the master of all the planetary systems, even Dhruva Loka. Okay, because it's Vishnu's planet, so he's definitely got to get a hold of that one. Yeah? Upon hearing about the purpose of Hiranyakashipu's severe meditation, Lord Brahma, accompanied by the great sage Bhrigu and great personalities like Daksha, went to see Hiranyakashipu. He then sprinkled water from his kamandalu, a type of water pot, upon Hiranyakashipu's head. Hiranyakashipu, the king of the Daityas, bowed down before Lord Brahma, the creator of this universe, offering respectful obeisances again and again and offering prayers. When Lord Brahma agreed to give him benedictions, he prayed not to be killed by any living entity, not to be killed in any place, covered or uncovered, not to die in the daytime or at night, not to be killed by any weapon, on land or in the air, not to be killed by any human being, animal, demigod, or any other entity, living or non-living. He further prayed for... Not a good prayer. Everything went off of it. Okay. He further prayed for supremacy over the entire universe and requested the 8 yogic perfections, such as anima and lagima.
Well, I don't remember that. What in all the mystic cities also.
So Sloka Anusharanam, summary of verses. 1 to 13, Hiranyakashipu performs severe austerities. 14 to 21, Lord Brahma visits Hiranyakashipu. 22 to 38, Hiranyakashipu offers prayers and requests benedictions. Verses 1 to 13, Hiranyakashipu performs severe austerities. Narad Muni said to Maharaj Yudhishthira, the demoniac king Hiranyakashipu wanted to be unconquerable and free from old age and dwindling of the body. He wanted to gain all the yogic perfections like anima and lagima, to be deathless and to be the only king of the entire universe, including Brahmaloka. Srila Prabhupada comments. It's all right when it's 12 point. When it drops down to 10, we have a problem. Okay. Srila Prabhupada comments. Such are the goals of the austerities performed by demons. Hiranyakashipu wanted to receive a benediction from Lord Brahma, so that in the future he would be able to conquer Lord Brahma's abode. Similarly, another demon received a benediction from Lord Shiva, but later wanted to kill Lord Shiva through the same benediction, right? So he's trying to get benedictions for Brahma, but in the benediction he wants to take over and control Brahma's planet. Right? So the person you're getting the benefit from, then you're using it against them, right? So, yeah. Thus, self-interested persons by demoniac austerity want to kill even their benefactors, benedictors, whereas the Vaishnavas wants to remain an ever-existing servant of the Lord and never to occupy the post of the Lord. Narad Muni continued, in the valley of Mandara Hill, Hiranyakashipu began performing his austerities by standing with his toes on the ground, keeping his arms upward and looking towards the sky. This position was extremely difficult, but he accepted it as a means to attain perfection. From the hair on Hiranyakashipu's head, there emanated an effulgent light as brilliant and intolerable as the rays of the sun at the time of the dissolution. Seeing the performance of such austere penances, the demigods who had been wandering throughout the planets now returned to their respective homes. Because of Hiranyakashipu's severe austerities, fire came from his head, and this fire and its smoke spread throughout the sky, encompassing the upper and lower planets, which all became extremely hot. Because of the power of his severe austerities, all the rivers and oceans were agitated. The surface of the globe, with its mountains and islands, began trembling, and the stars and planets fell. All directions were ablaze, scorched and extremely disturbed because of Hiranyakashipu's severe penances. All the demigods left the planets where they reside and went to the planet of Lord Brahma, where they informed the Creator as follows. O Lord of the demigods, O Master of the universe, because of the fire emanating from Hiranyakashipu's head as a result of his severe austerities, we have become so disturbed that we could not stay in our planets, but have come to you. O great person, chief of the universe, if you think it proper, kindly stop these disturbances, meant to destroy everything, before all your obedient subjects are annihilated. Hiranyakashipu has undertaken a most severe type of austerity. Although his plan is not unknown to you, kindly listen as we submit his intentions. Quote, the supreme person within this universe, Lord Brahma, has gotten his exalted post by dint of severe austerities, mystic power, and trance. Consequently, after creating the universe, he has become the most worshipable demigod within it. Since I am eternal and time is eternal, I shall endeavor for such austerity, mystic power entranced for many, many births, and thus I shall occupy the same post occupied by Lord Brahma. 2-10, Srila Prabhupada comments. Hiranyakashipu's determination was to occupy the post of Lord Brahma, but this was impossible because Lord Brahma has a long duration of life. The duration of Brahma's life is extremely great, and consequently it was impossible for Hiranyakashipu to occupy that post. Nonetheless, his decision was that since the self, Atma, and time are both eternal, if he could not occupy that post in one lifetime, he would continue to execute austerities life after life, so that sometime he would be able to do so. Right? So he's using this understanding of Vedanta philosophy for his materialism. You know, for sense gratification, his power, everything like that. So he understands he's not the body, yes.
So if he understands he's not the body, then how does he want to become immortal? He already is.
Well, he wants a nice situation. He doesn't want anything to be disturbed. Means he's eternal, means the soul. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he'd like the body he's in to keep up.
He really likes his body that much?
I guess so. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not like our bodies. It would be, you know, his mother is Diti, so she's a demigod, one of the top demigods, so they're Prajapatis.
So he's got a good one this time, so that's important.
Yeah, I guess so, like that. But I'm sure it's not that he won't try to improve his position. You know, all the demigods are in charge of everything, so they'll be working for him, so I don't know that. No, it's a quite common thing in the world that someone returns good with bad. You do something nice for someone and then they return it with something not nice. Fairly standard. You know what I'm saying? That's why the Vedic culture is there to try to rise above that. So he's only taking the Vedic culture from the point is that if you perform the activities of Vedic culture, you get the best, you know, how you say, sensual, emotional, intellectual experience. It's not that so, but from his own prowess, you know, I mean, he's still following the austerities, he's still going to Brahma, he's still following the system, but he just wants to become the top of the system. That's what it says. The demoniac mentality does that. You know, if it's divine, then you see that they don't do that. Arjuna never does. Yudhishthira never does. There's so many who never do. They never return evil for good. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the principle. So it's a demoniac mentality that causes that. Yes. Yes. Because you want what you want so much that you've worked with the person, you've gotten benefit, but now you can get more benefit by going beyond them or, you know, over them, through them, or whatever it is you need to do. And so the whole relationship, you were attracted because of the benefit you got, and here you can get further benefit. You understand? So that's why the self-centered aspect has to be at some point given up. Otherwise it creates too much of a problem. Yes. Because envy means you want, it's about I. It's not about anybody else. It's I and mine. So anybody else is mine, then it's okay. But if they're not mine, then there's a problem. So suddenly that's envy. One's envious of oneself, one's serving the Lord. One doesn't want to agree to that. No, I'm the supreme controller. Therefore, it's a problem. Is that okay? Yes. Yes. Right.
Preservation of the body beyond the
death. Right.
Is this akin to
conflict of the directive or to authority.
Right, right.
To do this, is this going to be so demonic behavior?
Yes, because it's a mode of fashion. You're trying to get how much enjoyment you can, stretch it out forever and stuff like that. So, of course, as we were discussing in the beginning of the class, it's a symptom of the nature of the living entity. The nature of the living entity is eternal. But the problem is they're going about it by an illusory process. Like that. And, you know, because people are... And they're... How do you say... They're in illusion, they're comfortable with going through an illusory process, and that is, how you say, afforded to them by individuals who understand how to take advantage of this illusion and make plenty of money off of it. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So things like this that are very important to people then become very, very expensive. You know, so people make lots of money off these things. So the more important it is to people, the more they charge for it. You know?
And there's something millions of dollars in research.
Yes, yes. But it's only where it'll make money. It's just like, let's say you're doing cancer research. Okay? And so people are working on something. Now let's say in their research they come across and find that they've found a cure for a particular kind of cancer. Right? But if that particular kind of cancer isn't very common enough where they can make their money back, because they're sinking millions into it, they'll just drop that research and continue into another area, even though they have it. Yeah. So the whole point is it's just about money. And so people are willing to pay, because something like that, it's dangerous, people will pay big bucks. Guaranteed, the medicine that they create, all these medicines, whatever it is, how amazing it is, probably doesn't cost any more than it does to make aspirin. Right? But because aspirin, they've already paid back on it and everything, and all the people that had to pay, they made their money back, so it can be cheap. These other ones, they're still trying to make their money, but to make the thing doesn't cost much. So even though people give money for benefit for the research, it's still used to make money. It should be, okay, if they give millions for research, you know, and charity, why isn't that medicine available for, you know, at a proper price? Yeah, so that's the difficulty. It all comes down to it's all money.
So it's all about envy?
Because is it about the soul? Do they want to hear about the soul? Because the point is if you make people God conscious, then they won't be so worried about these things. And so then where will the market go? You know what I'm saying? It's just like how much probably from what I know, I can't say for sure, maybe you could say, is that of the medical areas, one of the biggest where they make is for, what do they call it? Beauty. Huh? Cosmetic surgery and all these things like that. You know, and all these things, like you said, for aging and all those things. They get little dinky things, you know, like that, costs you $70, $50, like that. I guarantee it probably doesn't cost more than 20 cents. You know, the bottle costs more than what's inside. You know, the advertisement costs more than that. The stuff itself, you know, is probably just something out that grows in your backyard that you could go out and, you know, smoosh it up like that and put it on your face. No? Yeah, yeah, just put the mud on and all that. I mean, so it's telling some of these places, these special things cost you hundreds of dollars to do this mud pack. Like that, go down and you're going to get sweet. We were in Croatia. They have this one place where this fabulous mud, people go there, but the interesting thing, the island where it's from, no one that lives there goes there. So I heard about it, you know, because we do it here at the Ganga and all that, so I said, let's go down there. There's like, you know, I've only, you know, seen people do it. You know, he by and he saw that they were at one place, so everybody was at another place, and so he went to that place. And then we did it, and after we just thought, hey, this is nice, you know. But otherwise, you know, to them it's kind of like, that's for tourists, you know. You know?
Sometimes it can also be difficult to know the intentions of a person. But let's say someone is nice to you, and then you see the person has a certain kind of an act or a mission, and you try to help that person. Because the person is so nice to you, and you try to help them out of that illusion. But then the change is going away.
Yes, so therefore you have to be very careful about these things. Very careful, because people tend to take things in the wrong way.
Yes, so the point is, less you need to get involved or can get involved, or get involved knowing that this will happen. You know what I'm saying? That's why certain people are given certain things. You understand? The businessman is insulted in business. It doesn't bother him. Other things may bother him, but, you know, he tries something, it doesn't work, or some other company does something. Doesn't bother, he keeps going. You know what I'm saying? Administrators, they get insulted in the administrative field. It doesn't bother them. You know what I'm saying? Or Brahmins in the intellectual and education, it doesn't bother them. Other people can't tolerate it. You know, artists, you know, they'll act like dogs if they can express their art or someone will support them. You know what I'm saying? So they can handle that. No one else would act like that. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, is that's why something's given. That's why the duties are given to each varna and ashram, because they can handle and tolerate the difficulties of that while others can't. So you gain and you learn from that at that point. That's why if you connect it to Krishna, it's all beneficial. So if you want to teach, people are going to not like it. Is it your nature to teach? If it is, you continue teaching. You know, it's like that story of the sadhu and the scorpion. You know, like that. It's just, if it's your nature, you do it. And if it's not your nature, then don't do it. Because very few appreciate it. If they do, great. That's the standard. But there's so much, just the Kali Yuga has ruined the culture so much that people don't. But as time goes, as the generations go, it'll come back, and you know, you'll be able to see very nicely human society running. But until that, but the point is to go back to Godhead, you don't require it. If it's there, it just makes it so much more pleasant. Does that make sense? Yeah. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Govardhana.